Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of women and men who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer.
A study published by Psycho-Oncology revealed that nearly 80% of women with a breast cancer diagnosis experience post-traumatic stress disorder, known as PTSD, for at least 1 year after their diagnosis. A breast cancer care report also found that a third of women struggle with anxiety for the first time in their lives once active hospital-based treatment ends. But what exactly is PTSD? How does it affect women with breast cancer? And what can you do to manage the symptoms? Today I'm joined by Professor Naz Derakhshan from Birkbeck's University of London Department of Psychological Sciences. Naz is the founder of the BRIC Centre, which stands for the Birkbeck Integrative Centre for Building Resilience in Breast Cancer. She was diagnosed with breast cancer herself in 2013, and today I'll be asking her about her own personal experience, as well as her professional expertise and knowledge of PTSD in women with breast cancer. Naz, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So, Naz, when did you first start working specifically on breast cancer?
I started working in the breast cancer area a couple of years after I was diagnosed, actually. It was early 2015 when I became interested in understanding the vulnerabilities that women with breast cancer were experiencing in survivorship. And I was keen to try and understand the neurocognitive mechanisms, because I'm a cognitive neuroscientist. I was interested in the brain characteristics of these emotional vulnerabilities affected in women with breast cancer.
So that's looking at exactly how the brain is affected by a diagnosis.
Absolutely. How the brain is affected by a diagnosis of breast cancer, which is a life-threatening condition, and but also how treatment affects the brain function as well as structure across time post-active treatment.
And you yourself were diagnosed in 2013, as we mentioned. How did that affect you?
Yes, I was diagnosed in January 2013, the day after New Year's Day, actually. It was a huge shock. It was startling, and I can define it as traumatic. Breast cancer didn't run in my family, immediate or extent, and you know, you think that cancer is a disease of the old age. I was in my 30s, my daughter was just under 3 years of age, and I was at the prime of my life, to be honest, at the time, and I came down quite badly because of this shock, and it came out of nowhere. I never, ever thought I would be affected by breast cancer.
Yeah, and I think that shock is something so many people...
The shock, absolutely. The shock is something that most of us experience, and especially now where the rates of diagnosis are on the up, and because we don't understand the complexity and the heterogeneity that comes with breast cancer, it is difficult to come up with some kind of, you know, blanket statement to say, well, actually, you're going to get breast cancer, you're not going to get breast cancer. So it brings about quite a lot of uncertainty in women. And when they're diagnosed, yes, it's shocking. You know, there are huge implications for your children, for your partners, for your family. If you're working in full-time work, that's going to be heavily affected. So the individual and societal implications of breast cancer for women of this generation are absolutely huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And so those things that impact after diagnosis, the trauma from the treatment, are those the things which can lead to PTSD afterwards?
Absolutely. Diagnosis of breast cancer is a traumatic event. It's a life-threatening traumatic event, and with the accumulating implications that it will have in terms of the limited options later for women, yes, it can lead to the development of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder.
And what exactly is PTSD? What does that involve?
Yeah, so PTSD is a response to acute trauma. It's quite a complex condition. You can have experiences that involve numbness, distancing from the trauma, nightmares, flashbacks, insomnia, cognitive decline, and huge levels of emotional vulnerability. And of course, PTSD is quite correlated with depression as well as anxiety. So you can have depressive and anxiety-related symptomatology whilst you are experiencing post-traumatic stress symptomatology. This can vary across people, the extent to which they experience these symptomatologies. Now, the interesting thing is that research has shown that some people develop PTSD immediately after the trauma, but some can show delayed effects of PTSD. So maybe a few years even after the event, where the symptoms begin to rise, the flashbacks, the intrusive thoughts, which are quite involuntary and interfere with daily lives, can exhibit themselves, can show themselves. So it's a particularly complex condition and quite prevalent in, as you've said before, in women with a diagnosis of breast cancer.
Yeah, the study said nearly 80% of women, and that's, from up to a year after. But yeah, as you said, if people can get it beyond that and have symptoms continuing.
Absolutely. So a lot of the research that looks at emotional vulnerability in terms of PTSD-related symptoms in women with breast cancer has focused on early into survivorship. So after diagnosis, after active treatment, there is less research to show how the trajectory of PTSD symptoms change and manifest themselves way into survivorship. So we have, you know, characteristics like fear of recurrence is a particularly prominent one in women with a primary diagnosis of breast cancer, and fear of progression of disease in women with secondary breast cancer. So these fearful anticipations of what may happen, or what are you, the interpreting symptoms as recurrence and so forth, can all add to the probability of developing PTSD symptoms over time. So it's something that kind of we need to watch out for, we need to be aware of, not just when active treatment ends, but throughout survivorship.
Yeah. And did you personally experience any symptoms of PTSD after your own diagnosis?
I did. So when I was told it was breast cancer, I can remember the exact condition, the context that I was told about my diagnosis, and I went numb. I very involuntarily went numb, and it just felt like my surgeon was telling someone else, and I was there observing them whilst they were being told that they had breast cancer and the possible treatments that would follow. And in a very funny way, to this day, I can say that while I don't feel so numb about it, because you grow through trauma and you adapt, there is always that part of me that thinks, actually, it never happened. They've got it all wrong, you know. They're going to come back and say, well, it was a misdiagnosis. And I think that these types of recurrent thoughts about the diagnosis are quite normal in women with breast cancer. And I believe that there is a simple explanation for it, and that the brain is trying to process the trauma, which is overwhelming in its impact. And so, you know, people might say, well, that's irrational, you know, that's kind of a rational thought. You know, you've been there, done that, look how you're improving. However, it's quite a normal and rational response, I would believe, because the brain is trying to handle the impact of the trauma.
It almost sounds protective as well. It sounds as though you distance yourself from your own body and in a way, did that help?
Distancing may help in the shorter term,
yeah.
But in the longer term, it's been research has shown it's probably not the most instrumental way to go about coping with the trauma.
Yeah,
so coming to terms with the trauma, perhaps being in a position where you can embrace it and so forth, is more of an acceptable, productive way of dealing with the impact of the trauma. But distancing happens rather involuntarily at the time. And as you say, the brain is trying to protect you.
Yeah, and then as you said, perhaps that is it, that distancing which can cause greater issues later on, and perhaps why symptoms of PTSD might not appear until later on.
Absolutely. So when we distance or avoid, we engage in cognitive processes that can help us deal with things that are up and about, you know, in shorter term. However, this comes with quite a bit of effort on the brain's part. And because these issues are not dealt with and understood and analysed, then they can lay dormant for a number of years and then raise their ugly heads later on. And it can explain the delayed effects of PTSD in some women with breast cancer. But of course, PTSD isn't just specific for breast cancer. Mm. You can have the same kind of response in other cancers and other life-threatening conditions.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to ask about, actually, because especially if there's a need to talk about it earlier on so that people can start facing the trauma, why is there not much conversation around it? You don't often hear about the link between PTSD and breast cancer or any cancers.
Absolutely spot on. This is a point that is quite close to my heart, actually, and many women who've experienced breast cancer will resonate with that. When you're diagnosed, you are put into this kind of mainstream active situation where you're proactively doing something to kind of combat the cancer with your medical team. And so once treatment ends, the expectation is that you're cured, you're all right, and you kind of move on and you're ready to face the world in some sense. But in fact, it's at that time when you are at your most vulnerable. And you don't want to upset your loved ones or complain that maybe you're not feeling well or you're not up to facing the world again. So we tend not to talk about our vulnerabilities once treatment ends. And people like to congratulate you and say, oh yes, it's symptoms are over, you know, the cancer's over, the cancer's toast. But then there's the realisation that needs to come with it. Well, so are you. And that's often not talked about and avoided. But this goes beyond breast cancer. There is still a stigma associated with talking about or confessing your vulnerabilities, especially if they can be as acute as PTSD symptoms. You don't want to appear weak or that you're not coping properly. After treatment, you want to go back to work and you want to show your face to, you know, your colleagues, and you want to get back into the swing of things. So you are trying to move forward. But there's also this other big stuff that you're taking with you and is pushed to the side. But it's, in some ways, it's like the background music to a story. Sometimes it's louder, sometimes it's quieter. And it will be very beneficial if the public, the loved ones, families, friends, colleagues can be aware of such issues that women with breast cancer experience, so that such women can feel at ease about talking, you know, about their symptomatologies, about these nightmares, flashbacks, intrusive thoughts, and not see it as such a barrier to their progress. And so accepting those symptoms, accepting where they are, is one crucial step in allowing them to be accepted back into society and by their loved ones.
Yeah, and I guess as the conversation is brought up more through the work that you're doing, and awareness is made around the fact that it is a very, as you said, a very normal response to a very traumatic situation and abnormal situation. That awareness that it's not, they're not the only ones feeling like that. Must that help as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. We find that when women with breast cancer diagnosis and who've undergone treatment talk about their vulnerabilities together on a forum, for example, or in a group setting, they feel more comforted and say, oh, I'm glad it's not just me. I'm not alone. There are others who are experiencing similar symptoms. And I remember actually when I did the Breast Cancer Care Moving Forward course, which yes. helped me a lot through my own journey. Towards the end of the course, me and my the friends that I've made through the course, we thought it would be amazing if we could have such a course for partners, or you know, so that they are aware of the issues of what we're going through and so forth. But as you said earlier, talking about it, it's not a stigma, it's not a disability, it's a natural response to a hugely unfortunate, life-threatening condition. Absolutely. And I think we need to kind of step out of our, you know, comfort zones and accept the fact that the reality, this is the reality of what these women go through.
I mean, the word PTSD is quite a scary word. Is that something that you think puts people off accepting it and looking for support in the first place?
It's a scary word, and there are individual differences in the way that people meet PTSD criteria can manage living with a PTSD diagnosis. If, for example, you hear about PTSD diagnosis, you might think, well, maybe the person isn't well enough to work, where the person, you know, should be considered having a disability. But in fact, I think that perception is a bit wrong, because while PTSD can be a scary word, it's not a means to an end. There's quite a lot of research, especially coming from our own lab, that shows that the brain can change, the brain can combat, it can empower itself to manage PTSD symptoms quite successfully and positively. Not all is lost with a PTSD diagnosis. We're changing all the time. We are not fixed in our development. PTSD diagnosis can aid in the, I can see how it can aid in the medical profession, but from the person's point of view, there are restrictions and limitations that may come with the concept of PTSD and in turn undermine their abilities in coping with the symptoms. So I think there's a fine line there to be drawn between a medical diagnosis of PTSD and the possible implications that that has for the individual.
So what might happen for the individual if they are given that diagnosis in terms of the medical community or therapies or medications?
Yeah, so if they are given that diagnosis, then from a medical point of view, you can be given medication to be put on. You can receive psychopharmacological treatments or other psychological treatments. And depending on how you go about it, you can experience success rate or very little success through the, you know, the treatment journey.
Yeah. And you mentioned a lot of work has come out of your lab as well on this around emotional resilience. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes. So prior to developing breast cancer, I did quite a lot of work for many years on trying to understand how the brain is affected through emotional vulnerability, like anxiety, depression, and so forth, and related disorders. And then I became interested in translating that work in terms of building interventions that could target those mechanisms and then reduce vulnerability in order to boost resilience. And there is an important point here that I think needs to be made, and that is the research that we've done and replicated shows that if you have good levels of cognitive control and cognitive flexibility, then you are in a better state to manage and regulate your emotional responses. So if you think of a causal link between cognition and emotion, so you've got this cognitive resource, cognitive stamina, cognitive flexibility that is guiding and regulating your emotional responses. In the brain, these two systems, the cognitive system and the emotional system, talk to each other a lot, and they communicate with each other. And it's when that communication goes astray that one system kind of takes over the other. So, for example, with a diagnosis of PTSD, what can happen is that the emotional brain system is in the driver's seat. You know, it's right. Wants to protect you, it's firing. And so the cognitive system takes a back seat at the expense of, you know, PTSD symptoms overtaking. The neurocognitive interventions that we have adapted and modified and developed throughout the years tries to balance communication between these two symptoms. So if you think of it as like a seesaw, so it's trying to balance the relation, the communication between the cognitive and the emotional brain systems. So not all is lost.
Yeah.
And when we talk about resilience, it is about reaching that homeostasis. When we think of the concept of resilience, we think about things like change, adaptation, flexibility, bouncing back. You know, resilience like bouncing back from trauma. And so cognitive resilience, which is the focus of my work, tries to achieve that. It tries to make the brain smarter in some ways, to feel empowered, to be empowered to manage to regulate and bring this system, bring this cognition emotion system to a balance, to harmony.
Mm. How can someone improve their emotional resilience or increase it?
This is a very good question, and one that has huge clinical implications. I think that we are in a very fortunate position with research in this area, because of something that we like to call neuroplasticity. And neuroplasticity is something that we're born with. It's not something extremely special that the brain does, but it's something that the brain is born with. And it refers to how the brain can change, build new neural connections, get rid of old ones that don't work anymore. And so it's that elasticity, that plasticity in the brain that we can capitalize on in order to empower people to build resilience. And this process, of course, is accumulative. It can't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. In a number of research publications that we've produced in different vulnerable populations suffering from anxiety, depression, high levels of worrying, ruminative thinking, and so forth, we have shown that there is scope. There is scope, there is promise, that through empowering the brain, using tasks that can push some of these neurocognitive functions, the frontal functions of the brain that help us build better cognitive skills, manage our daily lives in a more efficient way. If we can boost that processing efficiency, then we can keep those anxieties, worries, PTSD symptomatologies at bay. And I think we perhaps need to step away from a model that would want to eradicate such symptoms. I think with PTSD in relation to breast cancer and the possible side effects that women with breast cancer end up living with for many years post-treatment. There's no point denying or trying to eradicate. We need to be vigilant for symptoms of recurrence. We need to be vigilant for signs of progression of disease. It's about how smart we can be in being vigilant, fearing of, you know, progression and so forth, and not let that take over our, you know, everyday lives, for example. I'd like to make a point here and give an example, actually, that this has always stayed with me. When I first set up the BRIC Centre, in one of the discussions that we had, the regular Sunday discussions we have, one of the members of the group said something about how she was fine during the day. She was shopping, she was picking like really nice dress for her daughter, and then suddenly she was hit by this thought of, oh my goodness, what's going to, maybe there are some cells in my body going round and they've homed in somewhere waiting to raise their ugly head 15 years later. This thought was so intrusive and salient for her that she had to stop doing what she was doing. That means shopping, doing a nice event. You know, she was engaged in a nice, you know, positive event, looking for dresses for her daughter. She had to stop it. She had to sit down. She felt like she was having panic attacks and sweating. And for the rest of the day, she couldn't do anything. This is the potential impact of what a PTSD symptom can do to you. This lady was not just post-active treatment. She was about 3 years down the line. So when we think about interventions that could help manage these symptoms, we think about brain power and processing efficiency and how we can, you know, regulate these thoughts if they do hit us. How can we dampen their impact? How can we regulate the nasty effects of these intrusions that can, you know, be rather interfering with what we're doing? And of course, this happened during the day. It can be worse at night. It can be worse when you're engaged in something that needs your focus of attention. And so the art of adapting smartly with these thoughts is something that we've been working on through the research that we're doing.
Amazing. Yeah, you can keep up to date with all of Naz's research on the BRIC Centre website and also join her weekly Sunday discussions on that website too, which are just for women with breast cancer, aren't they, through Facebook.
Yes, so the BRIC Centre is an integrative centre that has a translational network to it. We are a closed group on Facebook, and we are just over 1,500 women with breast cancer, UK women with breast cancer. And we engage in positive as well as, you know, upsetting issues that women with breast cancer deal with on a daily basis. For example, fatigue, managing PTSD, anxiety, depression, how do you tell your children about breast cancer, and lots of other salient, pertinent issues that women with breast cancer have to face on a regular basis. So we're a support group, but we're an educational group as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Naz.
No worries.
Thanks for joining today.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
If you have any questions for us or for Naz about what we've spoken about today, you can tweet us, private message us, or get in touch through Facebook as well. You can also speak to our breast care nurses on our free helpline on 0808 800 6000, and you can find the opening hours on our website for that.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.